This is ESPN Crick Info.
A victory for experience over youth, with Chennai Super Kings winning IPL 2018, and at the other end of the table, a victory for youth over experience with Delhi Daredevils at the bottom. Those two extremes and everything in between as we put our heads together in another episode of Talking T20. Pleased to welcome two Delhi boys in the house. First up, Gaurav Kalra, Senior Editor, ESPN Crick Info. Welcome, Gaurav.
Yes, Delhi boys is a fair reflection of where we stand, me and Akash.
Akash Chopra has been busy traveling through the country during his stint as a broadcaster for the IPL. Akash, pleased to have you on the show this time.
It's a pleasure, and it's been a good tournament. I expected this to be one of the closely contested IPLs ever, and that's how it turned out to be in the end. So very, very happy.
Yes, yes. And finally, an unapologetic Chennai Super Kings fan who also wears an analyst hat, Gaurav Sundararaman, welcome once again.
Thank you. Good time to be here after the
I believe you're joining us from Chennai. So I think we'll just dive in. And I am, of course, Srinath Sripath, your host. We'll be reviewing IPL 2018. Clearly, lots and lots to take in after a very competitive tournament, as Akash mentioned. Akash, first thoughts, most competitive IPL yet. We expected this in the beginning, but rarely do things come true as clearly as they have this time.
They did, actually. And the reflection of what to come was actually visible to all of us after the auctions. You pretty much knew that no team was just running away with the trophy. You also knew that there's no team that's completely out of it, which has been the case in the previous editions. But this time around, even the eighth team, though they were knocked out quite early, that was Delhi Daredevils, they still ended up winning five games. And that was the most by a team finishing at number eight in last 11 seasons. So you knew that even when a team is completely down and out, they still had the people, they had the players to make a match of things and also spoil a few parties. That's exactly what they did in the end. They did realize their potential. And some of the teams exceeded expectations. Someone like a Kolkata Knight Riders also told us that if you have few T20 match winners in the side, that's pretty much enough. And then the youth can be can take things forward, and you can still end up as the number third side in the IPL, which, in my opinion, was a bit of a surprise.
Gaurav, talking of surprises, fair to say the best team won the IPL?
Yeah, I think so. I think the best team in the fact that they adjusted very well throughout the tournament three. I think that was the most striking feature for Chennai. They had a lot of setbacks. For instance, losing Kedar Jadhav, a marquee Indian player, a very standout Indian player, who put in a performance in the first game and then goes out of the tournament altogether.
And they didn't replace him.
Then they didn't replace him. Then games get moved out of Chennai, and Stephen Fleming refers to this, that they basically constructed the team with the idea that they would play a lot of games in Chennai. That happens, yet they recover. But I think and getting that quality of service out of Ambati Raidu and then Dhoni 2.0. So in many ways, it was, these sort of the variety of these factors that worked very well in Chennai's favor, but they were clearly, because of these reasons, the best team.
Yeah, Gaurav Sundar, Gaurav Kalra here speaks about experience, and Dhoni and Raidu and Fleming's talk about experience after the game, and Bravo himself mentioning it. Shane Watson again came good, something that none of us really expected, that he'd be the standout Aussie in IPL 2018, 11 seasons on.
Regarding to CSK, nobody predicted. I didn't see one tweet or anybody predicting CSK to do well, and especially on the back of a Watson 100. So Watson has been a revelation. I think there's something about the management, the way they take care of the players, the way they give them the confidence. I think last year, especially for Bangalore, he hardly opened. This time they gave him a full run as an opener, and Fleming had mentioned that as well, that maybe proper roles were given and were well defined. And obviously Dhoni, the captain, has lifted players like Watson, Raidu to do exceedingly well, way beyond their expectations.
Akash, one thing we spoke about after the auction, I believe you were also in agreement with that, is that Chennai Super Kings built their squad especially tailored to the Chennai track. There were loads of spinners. We really didn't see the space attack coming good. Someone like Lungi Ngidi didn't really have a great T20 track record coming in. Mark Wood, etc. A lot of questions over that pace attack. All of that somehow ended up coming together with somebody like Lungi Ngidi starring at the end in the final. I mean, lots of things that were unexpected about the Super Kings side.
Absolutely. Once they were moved out of Chennai, they had to somehow find a couple of more pacers. So they did replace someone like Mitchell Santner with Ngidi. But I think in the end, it's all about how Mahendra Singh Dhoni handles that side. And also how much freedom has been given to him by the owners. And I was having this chat with Ashish Nehra post the finals. And he's been closely associated with one of the franchises this year. And the freewheeling chat actually ended up by around the corner where we agreed that the management decides the way the team is functioning in the end. The amount of freedom that the captain gets, the amount of freedom that the coach gets. And Chennai Super Kings, Mahendra Singh Dhoni, they are one of the same things. They are actually synonyms because he gets the kind of freedom that only he can get. And that allows him to do what he wants to do in the manner he wants. And he's been very, very good at it. So they're adjusting, adapting, something that Gaurav also touched upon, that Kalra, the Delhi boy, touched upon, was primarily because of Mahendra Singh Dhoni knowing his resources and knowing fully well how to make full use of them, whether it's Deepak Chahar, whether it's Shane Watson bowling in the first few games and not bowling at all afterwards, or whether it was Ravindra Jadeja bowling only six or ten overs in the first six games, and then bowling or finishing his quota of overs in the latter half, Harbhajan Singh in and out. He pretty much knows what to do, and he's been allowed to do whatever he wants, or rather he deems fit. And that's the kind of freedom that eventually leads you to the trophy, is what I've learned from this IPL.
You also have to remember that they were coming off a two-year suspension. So they were kind of restarting in the IPL. That in itself puts pressure on an outfit from the fact that you've got to win the trust of your fan base again. I know that their fan base remained loyal, but all of that. And I think that the key to this was that in the last two or three years, we saw a tapering off of MS Dhoni, the batsman, as we remember him from his grand glory days. And we suddenly saw a sort of reignition of that. And that, I think, made a very big difference. You've got to also remember that Akash refers that to this, that, you know, the captain controls the team and the environment in such a way. But he was also quite scathing. There were times in the middle of the tournament that he went after his own bowlers. And he basically pointed out to, how they are, not the fact that they were losing games, but they were failing to execute plans. So all of this, shows a certain sort of innate confidence within the group. And it came through in the end. I mean, the way they won the final, in that emphatic fashion after a slow start in the chase, was, it almost seemed inevitable that they will get it done.
G-Stats, a lot of stuff about what was the most surprising package. The second coming of Dhoni. None of us really called that. We had loads of analysis. We spoke about Dhoni in the past when there was T20 internationals being played, about his form as a short form player, where he should bat, all of that. He silenced most of those doubts in 2018, which is almost towards the late 30s of his career. Was that the biggest surprise package at the tournament for you?
Definitely. Both Dhoni and Raidu as an opener, I think both were the biggest surprises because both of them played at a far higher strike rate than what their career strike rate is, and scoring a large amount of runs. And that's what you want in such tournaments. If you finally look at the final four, Sunrisers had just a couple of batsmen performing. KKR, yes, it was more of a team effort, but Narain gave those huge starts for them. And for CSK, it was Dhoni and Raidu. So, yes, Dhoni in the middle completely kind of hit the fact that Jadeja, Bravo, Billings, all these guys flopped. So, great effort by Dhoni.
Akash, what was your biggest surprise? Something that you really didn't foresee during the tournament, aside from Dhoni and Super Kings, etc. There were also seven other sides, so let's not forget that.
Yeah, quite actually. For everyone, I think there will be our decision, or rather opinion will be unanimous on Mahendra Singh Dhoni and how he's rewound the clock. And one more point I actually wanted to make about Dhoni is that he's the only guy in all eight teams who has always ensured that there has been no collapse, except just one game, that one game in the playoffs, where there was actually a collapse for said Chennai Super Kings. Other than that, you will not see a single game where they would lose wickets in heat. There will be a Mahendra Singh Dhoni in the middle, ensuring that you don't lose wickets. We've spoken a lot about his hitting abilities and how he's refound or just rediscovered his mojo. But one crucial, critical factor in a T20 success is also not losing wickets in heat. That's what he's done. Going away from them, Chennai Super Kings for a little while, I think Kolkata Knight Riders, they've been the surprise package. And they have also given us a new template is what I feel. They invested a lot in their marquee players, Chris Lynn, Sunil Narayan, Andre Russell. They also invested in Mitchell Starc, and they also realized then that once you invest so heavily in one T20 match, when it's impossible to get his replacement. In the end, they ended up playing with only three overseas players. That was a surprise when you're playing a playoff or a semi-final kind of a situation and you don't have your four overseas players. That tells you that perhaps your auction strategy wasn't spot on. And still the team reaching that far. Yeah. With whatever they had, they managed to reach that far and they were on a roll at a time, that four victories on the bounce. Yeah. So they have given us a new template with regards to T20 cricket. It's not just about getting ticking all the boxes. If you can tick a few, and those few are very important, the others can actually be left unticked, and then you can still be okay, is what we have seen.
Yeah, I think they did keep talking about it. They had the thinnest squad by size. They had 19 players in the squad. So I think that itself was a triumph of a different model. I mean, glad that nobody got injured during the tournament, which was great. But it kind of worked for them in the end.
Yeah, and also, I mean, to invest in someone like a Dinesh Karthik as captain who didn't really have the pedigree as captain coming into the tournament. But the sort of chips fell in their favor a little bit because Karthik's probably having among his, you know, sort of most purple of patches in recent years. And he's carried that confidence into the middle. He played several innings in which he was responsible for them coming across, getting across the line. I think it was also important for them to play quite a few games with Sunil Narayan at the top, almost as the batsman that whose wicket they didn't care about losing. And with the sort of mindset that he played the games with was quite different to a regular batsman who still cares about the fact that he could get dismissed in that in a cricket match. Sunil Narayan came out there and played several innings, and not quite at least a few innings in which he gave the impression that he just did not care about getting out, and that kind of set them off in some of these situations. That was important, and obviously the fact that they were able to use their spin weapons quite well.
Sri, the other point I wanted to continue with what Akash was saying, to draw a parallel to Delhi of 2012. They had a similar setup with four real big match winners in Warner, Kevin Peterson, Mahela and Sehwag, and they did make the playoffs, and obviously they lost two games in the playoffs at a crucial stage. But the point is, yes, it has been done before, where you can have four or five match winners and surround them with a group of youngsters or good domestic strength. So maybe that's a template, like Akash said.
Yeah, but the converse is also true as well, because isn't it that you can have a team like RCB where you do you've experimented with the match
all
winner.
Again, all eggs in a few baskets.
Yeah, well, you've experimented very much with the match winner situation. There's been times when Gail, AB de Villiers, Virat Kohli, Yuvraj Singh, they've all been part of the setup, yet they haven't gone very far. So it can work both ways, because the RCB were clearly once again shown up with that strategy.
You know, the key difference between, say, a DD or an RCB and KKR is that they went with completely unknown commodities. You're talking about a Shubman Gill, a Rinku Singh, a Mavi, a Prasidh Krishna. These guys had never played the IPL before. And Nitish Rana, as one of their key batsmen in the Indian department, and who also has just, two seasons of or one and a half season of a decent IPL under his belt. So that kind of strategy was completely unheard of. That you can actually invest in people, but then you would always find somebody who's a regular, at least at the IPL level. But KKR's strategy was completely out of the box.
One other point I wanted to make about the surprise package, Shri, I know, you know, a lot of the times Indian players would come up through and do well in the IPL, and you'd notice them immediately. But those were guys who had a few years of first class cricket behind them. So in a sense, they had cricket knowledge, education, experience. Now you're suddenly seeing this emergence, and I wonder if it's the Gen 2 of the kind of cricketer that we are seeing emerging in the likes of Prithvi Shaw, Shubman Gill, and even Shivam Mavi. Unfortunately, we couldn't see Nagrakoti, Manjot Kalra didn't get games for Delhi, guys like this. But they seem like they are ready for the arc lights in the big stage almost as soon as you put them in.
Shreyas Iyer has become kind of a senior now. Yeah,
Shreyas has been around the first-class circuit for a while. I mean, one first-class season old, suddenly in an IPL cauldron, but they seem to have the confidence and the tools and the skills, most importantly. So maybe we are seeing a generation where T20 cricket is the foundation of their game and they just kind of know how to play it. Or limited overs, white ball cricket.
I think we shouldn't lose sight of the fact you mentioned RCB, and I kind of wanted to segue into the fact that Sunrisers have finished second. They've had a wonderful season once again. Last year they were done in by a rain-affected game in an eliminator against KKR. This time they made it all the way. And we've been talking about this so much, all of us, Gaurav, that Sunrisers have the most complete bowling attack. It's the most lethal, the most potent T20 attack. It's better than some of the national teams. At the end of the tournament, after CSK have supremely dented their confidence in a couple of games, is it still fair to call them the most complete bowling attack, Gaurav, G-Stats?
Yes, I think so. I think the only thing they've missed, unfortunately, was Billy Stanlake, I felt, because he was that 140-plus bowler which they had planned for, and they never could get an extra a very quick bowler, and which was something like a guy like Watson really feasted upon. Because otherwise, they had all their bases covered. A good mystery spinner, which makes the match into almost 16-over game every single time because of Rashid Khan. So all they needed maybe was that 140-plus bowler. Otherwise, I think it's a great attack.
Akash, were you surprised by how often their Indian pacers came good throughout the tournament? I know Basil Thampi and Siddharth Kaul had a couple of bad days here and there. I mean, sadly, towards the end as well. But were you surprised at how good the Indian seamers came throughout the tournament?
Not anymore, actually. This was the case 3, 4, 5 years ago when you would give the tough job to the bigger players. Mostly overseas players, bowling, batting in the power play was mostly bowling in the power play overs. Bowling in the death overs was primarily an overseas player's job. But over the last few years, we've seen that shift, that the Indian bowlers are coming to the fore. You mentioned Bhuvi, there has been Bumrah. Siddharth Kaul has really improved as a bowler and was, in fact, at times bowling the more critical overs. When we talk about defending a score, over number 19 is more critical than the 20th. And a couple of times, he was preferred over Bhuvi for that 19th over. Sandeep Sharma has always been a wicket taker with the new ball, so he continued to do so. It's just that towards the end, you also know, and all of us may just end up agreeing on one fact, that that is where they were found wanting. When you look at Sandeep Sharma and Siddharth Kaul and the final at the Wankhede Stadium, you know that they actually buckled under pressure. These were the young Indian bowlers who bowled, or rather committed too many unforced errors. Yeah. And that generally doesn't happen when you have a pretty senior bowler or a proven customer at the international level bowling. You don't get freebies in a final where you conceded, say, 20 out of the first five and then you go on to concede 116 in no time. Yeah. So you know that that's where they were slightly short. But having said all that, these Indian bowlers, and not just these two, Sandeep, Siddharth, you look at a Mavi or a Prasidh Krishna, and the rest, the young Indian bowlers, the faster bowlers. What you said about the batters, it's pretty much same about the bowlers, that this new crop of Indian cricketers is looking ready for the T20 format.
It's a natural progression, according to me, that you're seeing many more Indian fast bowlers who are coming and doing quite well in an IPL scenario, because I think that the message has gone down the system that this is a very lucrative career option if you're able to develop the skill sets that are needed to succeed in T20 cricket as a bowler, because teams will, when they go out and look for overseas recruits, they're going to go for either high profile players or and if they have the choice for big hitters, guys who are doing power players, that kind of personnel. But if you need a team and you need a squad in which you have 3, 4 maybe five, fast bowlers who have certain skill sets, whether it's the knuckleball, whether it's the ability to bowl the wide yorkers or the slow bouncers, whether it's the ability to control an innings or swing the ball at the top. And you're seeing that a lot of Indian players are coming through this because presumably they are practicing these skills year round to be, show them off before an auction scenario and to be able to get picked up for IPL contracts. So I'm not surprised that you're seeing a lot of young Indian seamers come through who have these ready-made T20 skills or have developed them.
Let's put you on the spot and ask you, which of these guys, which of these breakout stars from this tournament do you see playing for India in T20s in the future?
Well, definitely. I mean, Sid Call has already been picked. I mean, and as soon as he got picked, in fact, his performances started going down. If you look at that, I think May 7th or 8th was the team selection. Yeah. And subsequent
that would be a good
that,
analysis.
Subsequent
post-selection.
To that is, yeah, I think Deepak Chahar was someone that really kind of, stood out. It was very impressive. Shiva Mavi, for a short guy, able to bowl as quickly as he was. I think there's a couple of guys. I'm sure I'm missing some. I'm sure there were some young batsmen as well. But Prasidh Krishna as well, I think he's part of the A setup already. So these kinds of guys, they're going to come through and push for spots. It's going to be very difficult for selectors going forward not to lose patience with guys after a couple of bad games, because they suddenly feel like, oh, we have so many options. Why stay invested in these guys?
Akash, you've been around the grounds. You've traveled all over India for this tournament. Who are the guys, or who is the specific one guy who you think will make it or get fast track to the Indian T20 side soon? What's the buzz?
I think Shubman Gill is one of those guys who might just be donning the India cap sooner than later. And the good thing about him is that he's not going to be just a one-format player. He's got the skills, he's got the temperament, and he's very talented. So it's generally when you're looking at a young cricketer, you look at the three P's, temperament, technique, and talent. He's ticking all three boxes. So it's almost a given that he'll be playing for India very soon. They may actually be slightly cautious in blooding him in the shortest format. They may actually wait and put him in the one-day team or the test matches before just exposing him in the shortest format. But when you specifically talk about the shorter format, somebody like Prasidh Krishna is good. Shiva Mavi is good. You look at Mohammad Siraj. I think he's also improved leaps and bounds. Somebody who's been on the fringes, he's played for India in the past, albeit in a couple of games. I think he's come back a better bowler after this IPL. He's bowled well. Umesh has bowled well. I know that's not the question that you asked, but I think you've seen him grow and evolve as a bowler in this tournament.
He almost made up for that RCB attack, Akash.
Exactly.
I mean, how can we forget?
And more Kai, who we have not touched upon at all, is Mayank Markande. So young leg spinner who will eventually be pushing someone like a Chahal or Amit Mishra if he gets to play. Wrist spinners have done well, and this guy has shown that he can bowl on a flat one-credit pitch, a very small outfield, and still stay relevant. His googly is still pretty okay, and he doesn't bowl a long hop or a full toss. So I think he's got what it takes to succeed in the shortest format.
Gaurav, Akash has set this up nicely for us. Wrist spin in T20s is something that we've kept discussing. This is our sixth episode. We've kept going back and forth between wrist spin and finger spin and about how the attacking option is more preferred. How did wrist spinners fare in IPL 2018? Have batsmen started playing them out? What do the numbers say?
Before we get there, I just wanted to add on, K. Gautam is one more player who passed back into the Indian squad because he's been...
Is he also on the A tour to England, isn't he?
I think he's a proper T20 player. And moving ahead with respect to what you asked, is Mujib a leg spinner or an off spinner first?
Mystery spinner. You can consider him because he's got that one that comes back, the googlies. We can call him a wrist spinner as well.
Is Ashwin a wrist spinner or a off spinner?
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's the challenge. But I think finger spinners have done well thanks to guys like K. Gautam. They've shown that they're still relevant, and like we had discussed earlier, a wrist spinner and a finger spinner together bowling in tandem would be the ideal situation right now in T20 cricket, and bowling at different paces. I think the finger spinners have shown that they can control the game
and open the bowling as well. I think this was the season when spin opened the power play. Spin bowling in the power play bowled the most number of overs since the beginning of the tournament. Lots of trends like that for us to talk about. We'll move on to the next aspect that we need to speak about. There's no clear winner here, which is why I'm provoking this debate or starting it off. Who was the captain of the year? There was Dhoni with his old ways and his great man management, winning the tournament. There was Kane Williamson managing his, you know, the shortcomings thanks to David Warner and Billy Stanley going. There was Dinesh Karthik, like you mentioned. Who stood out for you?
Kane Williamson for me. I mean, I think with Dhoni, when it comes to captaincy, you know, he's had the kudos for many years and it's almost second nature to him. To be honest with you, Shri, I really think even now, right now, he may not be the designated captain, but he's actually the real captain of the Indian One Day and T20 squad as well. You see Virat Kohli fielding in the deep towards the end of a T20 innings. I think Dhoni's making the tactical changes. He's setting the field, and it's he's very much stayed on as captain in the real sense of the word, except for the public duties. Kane Williamson, because one that he kind of got foisted into the role, only played that much, maybe perhaps only because David Warner wasn't available, led from the front in the way that he scored the runs, but also in the management of what is a very Indian team in that sense. You know, the bowling attack that we've touched on already, made up of a lot of Indian guys and then, you know, having the likes of Rashid Khan to communicate with and to get the best out of players of that kind, and generally keeping a kind of very practical, serene air about him throughout the tournament. Very impressed with Ashwin at the start of the tournament, in some of the things that he did and some of those funky moves that he promised.
My recency bias means I didn't even bring him up.
Yeah, but I would, if there was a captain of the tournament, Williamson would shade it for me over Dhoni.
Akash, impressed with Ashwin, or is somebody else your pick?
You know, Kane Williamson has been absolutely extraordinary in terms of his tactical know-how and execution. But he was also blessed with a great attack. So his job was a lot easier. Therefore, I'm not picking Kane Williamson, even though he was perhaps seven shoulders above the rest with regards to his tactics. Ravichandran Ashwin was decent to start with, but I thought he lost the patience with his batting line way too soon. And kept shuffling, and I'm pretty sure as a player he wouldn't like to be shuffled so many times as with his own players. I'm going with Mahendra Singh Dhoni for a simple reason that as a captain he knew that what his bowlers were bringing to the table. That kind of understanding is exceptional when you know that you have a title to win, you know that you have a few veterans to carry, you know that your bowling is not firing, and still managing somehow or finding a formula that works without losing patience, without really throwing the cat among the pigeons and making wholesale changes. He has not done that. So for this season, I think Dhoni was exceptional. In the past, I've been a little critical of Dhoni being a little too defensive in his tactics. But what he did with this bowling unit this year, I thought that made him, in my books, the captain of the year.
Gaurav, I know Dhoni is your captain of the year as a fan, but as an analyst, who do you pick as your captain of the season?
One thing which this IPL has shown us is how important a captain is. And first you pick the captain and then you pick a squad around him, and not pick a squad and then choose a captain. That's something which was I've learned this IPL. And my captain would also be Kane Williamson. I think adding to just what Gaurav said, it's a huge shoe to fill, and he led his troops very well, and he knew how to use Rashid Khan. He set good fields. He was strategically very good, and not to forget, as a batsman, he led by example.
And he didn't he resisted the temptation with Rashid Khan. He almost never brought him in during the power play, even when they were going for runs. Not a single word for DK from any of you. DK, has he impressed you in his maiden season, Gaurav?
Yeah, we touched on this a little bit earlier as well. I mean, because he played in that middle order and played so many important innings for KKR, generally, it's a very unforgiving city if you start to do badly as a team, and then you're stepping into very, very big shoes. Gautam Gambhir had a lot of success in the IPL previously, and obviously Saurav Ganguly before that was captain, etc. So from that point of view, for the city to have embraced him and for him to have carried the team further, like Akash was saying, than a lot of other franchises, than a lot of analysts before the tournament expected them to carry, I think that from that point of view, the only thing I'll say is perhaps KKR were in a situation where it was the Tina factor. They really had very few alternatives, if no alternatives at all, to appointing him. But he's taken to it quite well.
Yeah. Akash, I'm going to come to you for something else different, which you brought up at the beginning of the show, which is about the Delhi Daredevils. Delhi Daredevils, usually they're down and out towards the later half of the tournament, but this time we saw them continue to carry forward the momentum brought about by Prithvi Shaw and Rishabh Pant and Shreyas Iyer, the injection of youth into the team in the absence of Gautam Gambhir. Were you impressed by Ricky Ponting as a coach and what he brought in his maiden season for the Daredevils?
Well, mostly no. A few things did go their ways, or his way rather, is the way he's invested in the youth. Somebody like Shreyas Iyer, Rishabh Pant, Prithvi Shaw, they were given opportunities and these guys delivered. But what about Glenn Maxwell? One guy who continued to play throughout and the kind of treatment, I personally felt it was a little bit of a favoritism that was playing out at the Delhi Daredevils camp, where someone like Jason Roy, Colin Munro, proven match winners. Jason Roy, in fact, won them a game against the Mumbai Indians. Gautam Gambhir, who relinquished his captaincy, but he'd never said that, don't play me afterwards. He also scored a 50 in the first game that he played of the season, and then did miss out on about four occasions. But then there were other captains who were missing out on four occasions as well. So if you were to just rate his coaching, and I'm expecting, like, or I'm assuming that everything that has happened with Delhi Daredevils this season has to do, or whatever has happened, has everything to do with how Ricky Ponting was running the show. It was his show, and his show was not necessarily the kind of show you would expect from someone like Ricky, because that patience, the faith in Glenn Maxwell was completely out of place. And the same, or rather, everybody was not judged with the same yardstick, or rather, were handled. Everyone was handled differently. This guy was special. Everyone else was a lesser mortal, and that's not how you run a team. And that's why the team did the way they did in the end.
Yeah, I guess they did depend a lot on the Indian batsmen. Gaurav, would you have thought about getting Gautam Gambhir back at some point?
No, I don't think so. I think that this once the batting lineup seemed to be quite settled and for the Delhi Daredevils. And I think once Gautam Gambhir made that decision to sit out, it was almost as much for his batting as it was for, it was actually all about his batting, not so much about his captaincy. There just doesn't, it's very hard to put a finger on it, Sri, but there doesn't ever in all these seasons now, some reason doesn't seem to have a settled air about them every time they get together as a team. And it's, in the IPL, teams change very dramatically and drastically. So it isn't like the same set of players are coming into the Delhi Daredevils unit. I mean, if you look at that, you look at the performances this year, Rishabh Pant is one of the highest run getters of the season. Shreyas Iyer's had a reasonable season as well. Perhaps the one area where they were lacking a little bit was the bowling, and it seemed like there was a sameness to it, and there wasn't, there weren't enough bowlers who were able to create a little bit of mystery or had genuine pace or were able to exercise control. Maybe that's where things went pear-shaped for them. But yeah, and I have to admit, I'm quite surprised that Ricky Ponting was as pig-headed about Glenn Maxwell as he was, because whatever little interaction one's had with Ponting in the past, I don't think he's very enamored by players from his own country and all of that. So for to see him do this, I think it's I'd be very curious to hear him talk about it. I mean, what were the reasons why he got so stuck on the idea of Maxwell?
Yeah, he did speak about Maxwell. He was very surprised, and as surprised as any of us, that Maxwell didn't fire. Gaurav, I'm going to come to you about a couple of trends and two sides that we've not really touched upon in detail. One is about an anchor or an opening batsman like Ajinkya Rahane for Rajasthan Royals, and how there seems to be no place for a batsman like that, for somebody who's a little slow off the blocks and doesn't really carry on in the middle overs. That's one. The second point is about the bowling attack. As Gaurav mentioned, the Royal Challengers bowling attack probably went missing once again. What do you make of those two franchises, and are these the two biggest reasons why they didn't make it to the top yet again?
Tackling the RCB question first, I think their bowling ended up pretty well in the end, and Umesh, Siraj and Chahal possibly did what they could do, and maybe the other two bowlers was the problem for them. Southie, in on and off, and the fifth bowler was always a problem, and you didn't have enough backups. Like, you need 6-7 options nowadays to maybe counter such situations, and they're always playing in a very small ground. They're playing at Chinnaswamy, where it's always going to be very high scoring. They got the wickets they wanted, so maybe there they could have planned for some alternatives. But I think that's a good squad on paper. They just didn't execute their batting skills more than their bowling skills. I wouldn't be too harsh on their bowling this year. And with respect to Rajasthan, I think, yes, Rahane single-handedly, I think, cost them the IPL for various reasons. One, maybe his captaincy was not up to his best. And working with someone like Shane Warne, I think they're two very contrasting personalities. Not sure who actually ran the show. Was it Rahane or was it Shane Warne? And his batting, yes, if he doesn't get out, he needs to be a Parthiv Patel, technically. Parthiv always used to get out. He used to score those four boundaries and get out. But Rahane did not get out that easily.
Good example was the eliminator itself, wasn't it?
Yeah, and he didn't score quickly. So, yes, I don't think... I'm not saying accumulators. For Rajasthan, especially, as an opener, Rahane does not cut it for me. But there is still place for that role. It's not like CSK proved that you can still be accumulated.
If you have someone like Short firing at the other end, maybe it would have made sense, I suppose.
Yes.
Right, Akash, a point which Gaurav brought up, I'll get back to you again on the RCB bowling attack. There's always six or seven bowling options with other side. In fact, there have been days when Mahinder Singh Dhoni has not used a single one option completely, and he's got seven or eight options. Is it fair to say that the T20 game has gone ahead of where RCB are? Has it sort of left behind on the bowling stakes?
To be fair, I'll agree with Gaurav here that the bowling actually stood up. If there was a weakness in their team, it was their batting in the end. Because the over-reliance on just two guys was never going to be enough. They did not have the kind of backups that they should have had. And also the kind of guys that they have picked. And the same problem actually arises on Royal Play. When you pick a guy in a T20 format, you pick him for a specific role. And now, just because your team does not have a place for that guy, you push him and force him to play a different role. That's a recipe for disaster. That's what they did with, say, a Mandeep Singh, who actually did all right as a finisher, but he's not a finisher. He's someone who bats in the top of the order. You've got somebody like Rahul Tripathi, who was forced down the order. Rahane, as an opener, was working all right, actually, in the beginning. He was averaging about 33. Not the kind of strike rate that is acceptable otherwise, but still was a workable option. But the moment you pushed him at three, that also meant that Sanju Samson was pushed at four. And if you were to just look at the cold stats, you'll find that both of them were doing better at one and number three respectively, and not at three and four. So the moment you start doing that, it becomes very difficult for people to switch and adjust to a new role. RCB's problem, yes, high bowlers, but they did not have any all-rounders to fall back on. Their all-rounder options were Corey Anderson, who hadn't bowled a single over in about 12 months. And he was asked to bowl over number 16, 18, 20th against
Dhoni.
Mahendra Singh Dhoni, 3.0. So that was an error of gigantic proportions. You don't do that. And still live to tell the tale. So their bowling is actually, in the end, actually turned around, managed to turn a corner. Their batting just completely let down. Dhoni, or rather Virat and AB, but besides these two, there was nothing to write home about. Rajasthan Royals, I thought in the end they ended up punching above their weight because of one man, Jack Butler. Otherwise, they wouldn't have ended in the top four either.
Gaurav, there are going to be mini auctions in the coming years. Are these the two sides that have got the greatest distance to catch up, Rajasthan Royals and Royal Challengers?
You would imagine so, given the place where they've finished up on the table. I guess from next year onwards, there is a clear window. So the availability of someone like, for instance, Joss Butler,
it's going to be a World Cup,
will become clear throughout. I mean, he will be available throughout the season, as opposed to having to leave at this point. Even someone like Ben Stokes, players like that, you want those guys, even if Ben Stokes has had a poor season, to be available for the big games when they come around. So he wasn't in that eliminator contest. I think, Shree, one of the standout factors, and Gaurav will just back me up on this, is that this year I think substantially more sixes have been hit in the IPL than in previous seasons.
The highest first season.
And by a distance. Yeah. Not just...
Even
I don't
more
think
than...
The,
when 10 teams play, that's a critical factor.
Yeah, I don't even think, yeah, correct. And I don't even think, yeah, so it's not a small gap. which means that very clearly the T20 game is moving towards even greater emphasis on these power hitters being able to actually seize control of the game and be able to seize control of a passage of play and affect it in a very clear way. I mean, I think that's the one big sort of aspect that most teams will look out for at auction. So if players of this kind, sort of short, impactful power players of this kind become available and come through the ranks in the Indian system as well, their value is just going to keep increasing exponentially, even if they may not be the fleetest of fielders as CSK have shown, or may not have the second skill of being able to bowl with a little bit of control or whatever. So that is one aspect that franchises will focus on in the future, in coming up auctions.
Yeah.
I just want to add one thing here with regards to the sixer. I think, yes, you would always put a lot of emphasis on power hitting in T20 cricket, but what changed this year was the fact that somebody like Gail Rahul, Kane Williamson and Ambati Raidu were hitting sixes. People who were not generally known for sixes, or rather hitting sixes the way they did, 30, 40, 50 sixes must be between these three guys. And that's a sizable number. They're actually telling us something else, that normal, regular batsmen who are orthodox in approach and nature have found a way to clear the fence and hit sixes without compromising on their technical solid base. Someone like KL Rahul was hitting sixes off the front foot in that long off covers region of faster bowlers in the first, second, third over of a cricket match. And that's what Kane Williamson did. Managed to clear the ropes very often, more times than what we've seen in the past. So that's another lesson that we are learning, that it's not just about people who can hit sixes, but it's also about people who can now adapt to hit sixes, people who were not known for that kind of power hitting or aerial shots in the past.
Gaurav Sundar, I'm going to leave the last word to you. I'm going to ask you if that was the biggest trend you saw this season, or was it something else that you see T20 cricket changing and continuing to adopt in the seasons to come? What was the biggest trend that you saw this season?
Apart from the six hitting, the value of wickets, I think people have understood that you don't need to have too many wickets in hand all the time. And you might have a day when you finish at the dream score of 245 for 10.
Is that the KKR template then?
maybe not, but hoping T20 gets there.
Yeah, can you just elaborate on that? Is it something where you say that Narayan and Lynn should go hell for leather in the first six overs and then take it from there and not let up steam at all throughout the innings? Is that what you're saying?
It's not only Narayan and Lynn. I mean, like, all 10 batsmen. Not saying that everybody should just hit, but I think you should learn to accelerate at the right time and not be worried about consolidating. Yes, especially while batting first. While batting second, it's a different ball game. You go as per the target, but at least while batting first, I think people should give less importance to wickets. I saw Punjab do it a couple of times and they failed. But I'm sure that when you do that 10 times, you're more than often, you might succeed 5 times. So in such a league, at least in a league where you're playing just 14 games, it's worth a shot. But for that, yes, you need at least 8 or 9 batsmen to be able to hit sixes. And CSK showed a couple of games what you can do if you have a six-hitter in the end. So I firmly believe that it's a combination of power hitting and giving less importance to your wicket.
Yeah, and also, Shri, it's become a conversation that's been had many times. But I think this is also a wake up, it's also a message to the organizers of the tournament that there is a danger that it might, because of the way this is progressing rapidly, that we might end up seeing a tournament in which six hitting becomes the dominant theme to an unhealthy extent. That's why we saw in one game, I think in Pune, where there was help for the seamers. We saw that in games where the grounds are a little bit bigger, such as Jaipur, that you see a slightly more even contest. And so those factors should not be forgotten completely, because you would like to see the emergence of, you know, quick Indian bowlers continuing to bear fruit. I mean, continuing to be rewarded, or of young spinners that are coming through the system. If you're going to continuously have a tournament in which the novelty factor around a six, which used to be anyway much higher than it is now, 7-8 years of the IPL down the line. I mean, hitting a six in a cricket match used to be an event, an occasion, and it's now just another thing routine. That happens. It's routine now. And I think you've got to take this trend into account and say, right, even we saw a couple of games, a few games, where when the conditions allowed for the bowlers to get into the game, we saw very even contests. We saw some great defensive bowling by Hyderabad at their home ground where the wicket helped their kind of bowling a little bit. So maybe that factor should be considered when the tournament is planned in the future.
Yeah, Sunrisers Hyderabad template, they almost seem to be playing a completely different game to the rest of the teams. They were hitting small totals and then they were successfully defending them home and away. That's a wrap then of Talking T20 for the IPL. We've had 6 episodes so far and you can find all of them now on iTunes. And we hope you've enjoyed ESPN Cricket Post coverage of the IPL. Talking T20 will continue to be a regular feature as a podcast coming through once in a while, talking different aspects of the T20 game with analysts, experts and commentators. Thank you very much for listening and hope you join us next time.
You are listening to ESPN Crick Info.